and my whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day, no more public housing. Thinking back on my one-room shack, now my mom pimps a act with minks on her back. And she loves to show me off, of course, smiles every time my face is up in the sauce. We used to fuss when the landlord dissed us, no heat, wonder why Christmas missed us. Birthdays was the worst day.
Not like getting your magazine shout out in one of the most popular rap songs of all time. Yeah, well, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, we discovered him, you know, brought his unsigned demo tape up to a young Puff Combs when he was getting Bad Boy, you know, off the ground.
It's the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, one of the legendary names of hip-hop. You may not know the name Dave Mays, but you definitely know his work. Mays started The Source magazine, which many claim to be the biggest voice in rap journalism history. It was started by Mays almost 30 years ago at Harvard University. In the subsequent decades, The Source has become the Bible for the emerging industry and even started its own award show. But back in 2006, Mays split from The Source after he lost control of the company to a private equity firm. He and his partner Ray Benzino stayed in the publishing business, though, launching Hip Hop Weekly, a magazine that grew year after year after year. Mays has been both a vocal cheerleader and an outspoken critic of the hip-hop industrial complex, oftentimes rallying against corporatization of the music. In one past interview, Mays said that hip-hop lost its way when Tupac was shot and killed in Las Vegas. Well, today, September 7th, is the 21st anniversary of the day that Tupac was shot. He died a week later. Tonight, a conversation about journalism, street culture, and the music that now is the most popular genre in the world with a man who knows all about it, Dave Mays. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the big table here at the Download. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. You too. Thank you. Very, very happy to be here.
What's it mean for you to hear that? I mean, I kind of saw surprise in your eyes that, you know, this is the 21st anniversary. Today was the day that Tupac was shot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was interesting when you mentioned that as we were preparing, you know, to talk about this stuff. And so, yeah, that's a meaningful date, obviously, in hip hop history. And here we are on the anniversary to have some pretty interesting discussion.
Yeah,
about it.
You know, it's interesting because when I was reading about you, you talked about Tupac being really one of the artists who was socially and politically conscious. He spoke from the heart. He didn't care necessarily about the record industry. He almost represents the end of one chapter and the beginning of another when it comes to hip hop.
Yes, that's one of the, in my opinion, and I think that's accurate. That's a point of view I've been bringing up for some time now, you know, with the movie that came out recently and a lot of the other stuff, these documentaries and different things going on. But, yeah, I believe very strongly that, yeah, that was kind of like a major turning point in hip-hop history. You know, Tupac was at the height of the industry at the time. He was, you know, the biggest star in the game, and, you know, he was everything that hip-hop was really all about as it had evolved from, you know, the 1970s up into that point.
The combination of street culture, but also being able to talk about the issues of his community. I mean, there was everything in that music, being a poet, and not to mention the music. I mean, there was definitely the full package.
Yep, multimedia, movie star, charisma, you know, again, social consciousness, and all wrapped up into one. And so when he got, you know, killed, it really, you know, combined with the subsequent downfall of Death Row, you know, it just created this huge kind of vacuum in the business and the industry. And, you know, I think that's when, you know, things started to change for the worse.
Dave, it feels like I have a historian in the studio when it comes to hip hop. I mean, when you go back, I mean, we start talking about your days at Harvard, being a student, having your own show and wanting to put a newsletter together to promote that show. Take us back to what was 1987, 1988.
Yes.
What attracted you first off to hip hop at that time? And what were you trying to accomplish in Boston?
Well, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and, you know, just kind of got into black music and black culture coming up, you know, in the city, going through the public school systems, stuff like that. Hip-hop wasn't that big in D.C. because we had go-go music. That's a whole nother, you know, smaller story. But when I got to Harvard, you know, I'd been into hip-hop a little bit, and I started this radio show, actually, as a host on a radio show on the college station. And, you know, just, you know, I love the music, and the idea for The Source came out of, you know, interacting with listeners to my show, wanting to know information about what was going on in hip-hop. There was no, you know, real voice for it at the time.
There was no cable television or anything like that that was selling 24/7 the story of hip-hop.
Not even, you know, 1 7, like one second. Right, there was you know, hip-hop anywhere. No radio stations, no television coverage, no magazines, no newspaper. Nobody was covering hip-hop at all. Yeah, just, you know, I was always an entrepreneur, and just got, you know, got this idea to kind of create the Rolling Stone of the hip hop generation. That was really my idea when I first started.
When did you recognize? I mean, when did it go from a newsletter to something that you realized had impact in hip hop? I mean, you moved to New York City, you were able to do more, again filling a niche that no one was in. But when did you recognize that The Source was The Source?
It happened, you know, pretty quickly. It grew pretty fast. I would say, you know, probably by 1990, when I graduated, moved to New York, set up our offices in New York City. You know, that was kind of when we started to really have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of momentum and stuff. But it just, it grew, you know, step by step by step throughout the, you know, the 90s. It just kept growing.
What do you look at in the success? Was it word of mouth? Was it the fact that the artists were giving respect to the magazine? What was it that you think was the secret ingredient that kept you moving forward in that business?
It was a number of things, being first, but being authentic, you know, that kind of goes to one of the other topics you brought up, you know, authenticity when dealing in hip hop. So, you know, I think that's really, you know, from the editorial content to the way the business was managed and conducted, you know, just being kind of ahead of our time with a lot of things. Branding was something that magazines weren't doing back then, or any media companies mm-hmm. weren't really focusing on branding in the way it's, you know, all the rage, you know, these days. And that's when things like the Source Awards and other spin-offs.
Right. And we'll get to the Source Awards as well. It's such a huge, iconic part of pop culture history. But I want to ask about, you know, in those early days, and I do consider, I mean, it's sort of classified as rap journalism. Being an upstart where you wanted to cover an industry that no one else was covering, and, you know, and it was becoming more and more popular, did you find yourself having to write more positive stuff or to help with people's careers and things of that, as opposed to giving negative reviews or writing about issues in the community that people didn't want to talk about? Talk about that, the early days of trying to put, you know, sort of find your footprint, find your way when dealing with an industry and an area that really hadn't had any media.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, there's a couple aspects of kind of the answer to that. You know, I think on the one hand, I did feel like the hip-hop was sort of, you know, very misunderstood and under attack, you know, by the mainstream, by everybody and everything. There was, you know, there was us who loved hip-hop, this young generation of people, and, you know, that was growing, and then there was everybody else. So I felt a kind of a need and an obligation to kind of be the voice of the culture and be kind of, you know, a representative, you know, for hip-hop, you know, as a media outlet. But when it comes to being necessarily positive, you know, no, I mean, The Source was very respected because it had credibility. And, you know, that was also something that was, you know, it is in all media, it's a fine line. And, you know, it was at the time in hip hop. But, you know, we were honest, and sometimes that, you know, that upset people. But, you know, generally, I've always said, you know, you can choose to be kind of the National Enquirer, or you can choose to be, you know, more like the New York Times. Now, these days, there's not that much of a difference necessarily. We've come to learn but you know, you get the idea.
Dave Mays is my guest in studio, the founder and publisher of The Source for so many years, and also now Dave Mays Media. He is going to be featured in the documentary that Fox is putting out on Biggie and Tupac, coming out on September 24th. He's also got a podcast, radio show he's working on here. He's relocated to Chicago. Dave Mays, my guest at the big table tonight. We'll continue the conversation after break. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight at the big table. Dave Mays, the creator, founder, publisher of The Source magazine, and of course The Source Awards, which is a huge deal. And like I said, one of the more iconic award shows in pop culture history. Dave Mays in Chicago now, a longtime East Coast guy in New York City and born in Washington, D.C., went to Harvard, but he's relocated to Chicago. He's working on some new projects. We'll get into that in a little bit. He's also going to be featured in the documentary on Fox coming up here on September 24th, the documentary on Biggie and Tupac, of course, today, the 21st anniversary of the shooting of Tupac Shakur. All right, let's talk about, right before the break, you said something about so many forces that had aligned against hip-hop emerging into the mainstream. And this, we're talking about the 90s. We're talking about early 90s, probably, right, late 80s. Mm-hmm. This idea that there were a lot of forces that were aligned to essentially say the culture, the street culture, the lyrics, everything that's being rapped about, everything involved here. This is not American values. We don't want it to be a part of our society. Politicians got in the act. I mean, it was a real thing. NWA played center stage on this. But The Source was in there, too. The Source emerged at that point to be almost, like I said, the Bible of an emerging industry, a place that could be authentic. What do you think about the idea of hip-hop and street culture, the idea that there was so much fervor around keeping this art form down?
Well, you know, there was a lot of a resistance because, you know, hip hop was around to stay. You know, a lot of people thought it was a fad in the 70s, 80s, you know, thought it was going to go the way of disco. But it just kept growing and growing, and it was very organic and very, you know, authentic. And, you know, it was being consumed by a mass market young white audience. And so, you know, you had a lot of parents and, you know, older people and the media and everything that didn't like the influence that hip hop was having. So, you know, it was, you know, a lot of forces, as you said.
I mean, it's not unlike rock and roll before it, but a resist authority. A more revolutionary kind of music that said, you know, challenge a lot of the core ideals of the society we live in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess for me, what I find interesting about it is that for years, and you've talked about this in interviews, it feels like the record industry, the world has tried everything it possibly can to extract the street culture part of hip hop. Deliver hip-hop in a packaged bow with a, here it is, this is perfect for consumption for American mainstream. But they've gone to extreme lengths, but the street culture continues to come back, and it continues to be the authentic voice and what resonates in the music.
Yeah, well, I mean, hip-hop draws its lifeblood, let's say, from the streets. And, you know, hip-hop was born out of the streets and born out of the conditions in the inner cities of America. So, you know, hip hop's DNA is integrally linked to the conditions of inner cities. You know, it was created in the Bronx, in the South Bronx. That's where it started, you know, as a culture, and evolved and, of course, spread. And you know, that's, you know, unfortunately, as the music and the business grew, the money which was at some point kind of going back into those communities more so, you know, stopped. And that also goes back to Tupac and other things that changed in the business and the control of the music. But ultimately, unfortunately, it hasn't, you know, our inner cities have continued to suffer and continue to, you know,
the same issues
to get
worse. Same issues from the 70s and 80s that started hip hop, like you said, in the South Bronx, are issues today that many inner city communities are still dealing with. And like you said, in worse ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a, you know, it's a,
thing where a lot of times companies don't want, you know, they want the street, they want the authenticity, but they don't want kind of the things that come with the territory. And, you know, sometimes that's a difficult balance. That's something that I think I was able to do well and that the source, you know, really did well. And, you know, I think that, you know, was a key to our success.
You know, one of the famed source beefs that you had was with Eminem. And Interscope Records. Interscope Records, of course, we just saw the Defiant Ones in HBO about Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre and all the things that we're talking about here about authenticity and Death Row Records and everything in between. You know, that story is told through one lens. It's told through the main players in that, Jimmy and Dr. Dre and the others, about how they changed hip-hop. From the Source magazine, a magazine that's on the street, did they change hip hop? Did Death Row Records and Interscope, more importantly, and the record companies that were referenced in that series, did they change hip hop for the better?
I don't know for the better. They certainly were. You know, they were the major record labels for many, many years, and you know, they had a lot to do with, you know, hip hop's evolution and development. You know, as far as whether it was for the better, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, I personally think hip hop has gone into, you know, a worse state since the late 1990s. And, you know, a lot of the...
Why? What happened? It's just, is more money on the line? What's more mainstream?
I think it just became more of a corporate product than a, you know, a natural expression of art and culture. And, you know, just a business and, you know, that and the people making the decisions of that business are really the ones that a lot of times people don't recognize, you know, have a lot more control than you think over what images and what voices get out there to the mass market and to the world. It's not just... You know,
it's not organic.
No,
it's not like somebody makes a track and it's such a great bumping track and it's got to be on the radio. We just got this fresh off the presses. No, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly. There's a lot more to it, a lot more control over the music industry there has been for a long time.
Was the writing on the wall? I mean, when you were at Source and you were running that magazine and you were doing you're doing a magazine on the heart and soul of hip hop. Could you tell that it was becoming more of a mainstream industry, that it was becoming a product?
Well, sure. I mean, I was part of that. I mean, I was driving that. Again, you know, that's one of my jobs, was, again, to be that bridge between the business world and the corporate world and hip-hop as a culture and the streets. And that was, I was at the forefront of doing that. But, again, doing it in a way that had not just authenticity, but just respect for the culture and for the people and the places that the culture comes from. And, you know, that's kind of something that, you know, I don't think a lot of other corporations and executives necessarily had as a, you know, as a priority.
Let's do this. Let's take a break and we'll get an update on tonight's news. When we come back, I want to talk about a lot of the story of hip hop, and Source Magazine plays a big role in this. The Source Awards come to mind. Really focuses, especially in the 90s, around this East versus West Coast rivalry. And everyone knows this Tupac, Biggie. And the Source Awards plays a role in that, the 1995 Source Awards. But I want to get your take, you know, get your perspective as someone who's at the center, created that award show, put that all together. And how much in history, as we now look to, geez, that's 20-plus years ago, do we still remember it the same way? Are we telling the story of hip-hop and how it emerged in the right way? Dave May is my guest tonight. He is the founder and creator of the Source Magazine, a magazine that, really was considered to be the Bible of the emerging hip-hop industry in the 80s and 90s. Dave May is relocated here to Chicago. He's got some new business stuff. We'll talk about that coming up in the second half. Dave, all right, we'll take a quick break. And we'll get the news. We'll come back. More at the Big Table. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Sam Panionovich is going to be here. We're going to talk about the month of September as it comes to Chicago baseball. The Chicago Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers playing at Wrigley Field tomorrow. Set a 3-game set this weekend. Chicago White Sox, well, that's a different story. We'll talk about the future of the White Sox as well, coming up 9 o'clock hour. My guest tonight at the big table, Dave Mays, started the Source magazine, the Source Awards, longtime legendary voice in rap journalism, hip-hop music, in studio as he has relocated to Chicago. We East Coast guy, went to Harvard, made his name in New York City, grew up in Washington, D.C., but now he's here in Chicago. We'll talk about that in just a moment. You know, we left the conversation saying, is history going to remembering hip hop in the right way? And let's go right to the one of the biggest storylines that the Source is a big part of was the East versus West Coast rivalry, which a lot will pay. I mean, you go on YouTube right now, there's a million clips of 1995 Source Awards sort of being the beginning of the hip hop rivalry that we know so well between Death Row Records and Biggie and East Coast Squad. So are we remembering correctly?
Well, I think I think that there is a lot of misinformation and sort of misperception about that era and where the Source Awards fit in, and you know, just what this whole thing was. And you know, it has a lot to do with all the attention that's been focused around Biggie and Tupac and their, you know, their deaths and their murders and being unsolved still, you know, to this day. You know, all the attention surrounding that, and that naturally has, you know, tied into coverage of the East-West rivalry. The East-West rivalry started, you know, many, many years before all this, in the early 1990s, New York was big. You know, New York was running hip-hop throughout the 80s. There really weren't too many artists that came from anywhere other than New York that were popular, you know, really big stars in hip-hop in the 80s. And New Yorkers were very kind of smug about, you know, their hip-hop, and they kind of looked down on everybody coming from other parts of the country and different types of music and sounds that people who were creating hip-hop in other areas were doing. So, there was this, you know, feeling amongst people on the West Coast from the beginning, you know, like, you know, we don't get our props out of New York, and, you know,
they're
New York being the media
capital,
you know, of the world still, and a lot of things still, you know.
And I was going to say, you know, as much as that this is a well-known thing in hip-hop, it's also a well-known thing in entertainment. It's just not just rap music. Mm-hmm. It's acting. It's everything else that there's a little bit of animosity among the coasts.
Yes.
Continue.
But that's really where it started. So in the late 80s, when, first N.W.A. and then, through Dr. Dre and then the emergence of Death Row, you know, that's when the West Coast really became, you know, the dominant force in hip hop and sort of took the, you know, the title from New York and from the East Coast. So during that period of shift, you know, there was this tension where a lot of artists would talk about it or make songs or do different things. And this was, you know, years and years, again, before the 95. This is in the early 90s. Tim Dog, F. Compton, and different thoughts, you know, songs like that. So by the time the Source Awards came around, the whole thing also was much more complicated by what happened with Tupac in particular. Long before he was affiliated with Death Row Records, Tupac was coming to New York City. Tupac was getting involved, hanging out with guys in New York City. Tupac gets shot, at the studio, this, you know, famous incident and story that's been told. And that really was the beginning of Tupac having a problem with people on the East Coast and in New York in particular.
And he had a platform right.
In his opinion, they were linked to Biggie, and that's when he started, you know, that's really when the rivalry between Tupac and Biggie started.
You being a New York publication, the Source, East Coast, grew up in D.C., started in Boston. Did you feel that tension? Did you feel the tension? Did you feel it in a personal way that you were New York hip hop media, that L.A. was being disrespectful to New York? I mean, how did you approach what was happening in rap music?
Well, you know, I as the Source and as the premier voice for hip hop, you know, I felt it was my job to, you know, be above that and try to, not even above that, but just to make sure that New York bias and stuff didn't, you know, kind of seep into our magazine and, you know, dominate things or even into our business dealings. And, you know, I came from D.C., like I said earlier, was a place where hip-hop really was not like what it was in New York and certain other East Coast cities at the time and for many years. So I didn't have the kind of New York thing. And even Boston, as a city, in those days, Boston was one of the only cities on the East Coast where, you know, in the streets and in the hood, they were listening to, you know, music from all over the country, the Ghetto Boys and N.W.A., stuff that people in New York weren't listening to. In New York City, they weren't listening to that stuff at that time. You know, I had an open mind, you know, musically in terms of my environments that I've been around, and I hadn't come from, you know, a lot of people in New York and their perspective. So I went into it, you know, very intentionally trying to make sure, and you can look at early issues of The Source with different West Coast artists that
early,
were on the cover.
Yeah, early with Dr.
Like
Dre,
that.
Right. You know, I'm interested because I wonder how much, from your vantage point, from your where you sat as the guy running The Source, you are The Source magazine. How much did it hurt hip-hop that this was a storyline that was extracted for mainstream media, that this, out of all the music that was being produced all over the country, an emerging creative music was being dominated by a beef that MTV loved, and that every mainstream media loved? I mean, it became much more than just a hip-hop beef. It became sort of a mainstream beef, Tom Brokaw talking about it. I mean, how much did that help, or how much did it hurt hip-hop?
I think a lot of that helped, you know, because, again, it just fueled those of us, again, that were in the culture and in the fight, and, you know, we didn't, you know, that just made us more determined, I think all that stuff, you know, really helped.
For you, you know, and I mentioned at the beginning, Source Magazine, in 2006, you got out of it. And, you know, you had an issue where a private equity firm essentially took control. And you look back out in interviews and you talk about how, you know, you make mistakes and it's a money mistake and you let someone have too much control of the company and they were able to take advantage. That, the beef with Eminem, some of the early editorial things that happened with the magazine. How much did you learn from your time at The Source? I mean, because you've been very honest and open with your interviews about making mistakes but learning from them. You know, when you look back on your time at that magazine, especially, it's such an amazing time. I mean, decade after decade of being the, like I said, the Bible of the rap industry. Is it a positive memory for you? And what did you learn from your mistakes?
I've learned a lot, and I hope to. You know, kind of prove that out more being here in Chicago and some of the things that I have planned. You know, it was a difficult experience. You know, I was very young when I started The Source. I was 19. You know, this was like, you know, a one sheet newsletter that I created, you know, just a little idea out of my dorm room and, you know, made it into a reality and, you know, lost it very kind of just in some ways naively at that point, just in terms of the type of deals that I got myself into financially and, you know, then to, you know, just to kind of lose it very abruptly like that. It was a lot. But in the end, you know, I learned a tremendous amount and, you know, it's made me more, you know, a better person today. And, you know, it's not how you get down or how you fall down. It's how you get back up, you know, really that defines you. So,
well, you've determined to restart and relocate here in Chicago. You got Dave Mays Media. Talk about, I mean, because you mentioned to me that you're starting a podcast about whether or not Chicago can be the epicenter of the new epicenter of the hip-hop community. That's starting up. I mean, is it learning from the experiences you had both at The Source and Hip Hop Weekly and taking those experiences and bringing new media projects to Chicago?
Yeah, I think there's just, you know, the right time now. I mean, it's a time where I think, you know, hip-hop has an opportunity to kind of bridge the gap and bring together these generations now, because you have people going into their, you know, in their 50s who have grown up on hip-hop, and now you have this younger generation And while they may have, you know, different musical tastes and different, you know, kind of perspectives on things, ultimately I feel like there's a connection now between these generations that can be made, that these young people today, you know, are kind of, you know, interested in social and political issues and interested in, you know, looking at things, you know, around us in this world in a sort of, you know, more real kind of way than the things that are kind of projected and portrayed to us by the media and by, you know, it's a lot of hype out there that everybody's seeing. And that's really one of the things that made hip hop so, you know, what its appeal was in the early days, you know, to people like myself, you know, 16, 15, 17, whatever year olds at that time, was it was just like we connected, you know, with the music and with the voices. So, you know, with people like Chance the Rapper here in this city, I think, you know, he's remarkable in what he's doing. And I think he could prove to be, you know, a very pivotal person in what happens with the future of hip hop because of, you know, him really being the first artist to, you know, to stay completely independent, have complete, you know, control right. over his music and his brand and his career.
And in a way, I mean, I think about him and I think about Chicago. I mean, he has gone back to some of the things we talked about even in this interview at the beginning of what the spirit of hip-hop is, to be able to create music and be able to have a strong message and incorporate street culture without it sort of being gobbled up by the corporatization of an industry.
Yeah, I think, you know, Chicago also, you know, has attracted me because of, you know, the problems that are going on here in the city. And again, if I can be a part of revitalizing hip hop and bringing it back to a period of time where, you know, it was a part of social and political issues and thinking and talking about things like what's going on here in the city with the violence, that, you know, we will find that it will be a part of fixing those problems, which is how I saw hip hop and what I saw it personally was doing until it kind of got derailed and started going on a different course.
Well, how do you keep it from doing that? Because, I mean, it's interesting to me because Chance is a good example of a guy who, yes, he's independent, but he's also in Kit Kat commercials. Meaning, you know, at a certain point that the consumers want him. I mean, they want him and advertisers want him. And at a certain point, you see the cycle again. And putting him to a side for a second, you do have two faces of hip-hop. You have a burgeoning creative experience. If you just go to Apple Music and look at the top 50 tracks on a list for hip-hop, there's all these great names that are wildly popular that you may not have heard. And they're talking about where they're from. They're talking about political and social issues. And then you also have, you know, rappers that are on Kiss FM. And I mean, that are like the top 40 type stuff that continues to sort of be the face to people who are uninitiated. How do you merge that as a creative art form? How do you merge those two things? How do you make those two things work together?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. You know, back in the 90s, there were various types of hip hop, you know, that had existed. You had MC Hammer, you had Vanilla Ice, you had, you know, other successful forms of rap music at the time. But ultimately, there was still a cohesiveness to the culture and an authenticity to the culture. And now it's been all broken up, and you know, you have, you know, everything's much more segmented. This weekend, I went to this festival here. What was the name of the festival? Do you remember?
The Breaks,
yeah, really, man, had an awesome time there. They had some of the best underground hip-hop artists that, you know, just really talented, lyrically saying things, and, you know, it was a mostly white young audience that, you know, loved the show, and it's just, again, it's a different, whole different, you know, market here than you have, you know, your drill music and your trap music, and then you have your, you know, your... it's just very segmented, and I think there is a way to bring it back, but all it really goes back to it being a culture, and these aren't just styles of music, but there's an underlying culture that helps unify everything. And so if that culture has a voice in the media, which is also what I did with The Source, was really be a voice for the culture. There's really no voice at all for the culture anymore. You have people covering the music and, you know, what's perceived as hip-hop and entertainment on a very kind of surface level, but there's nobody that's speaking for the culture.
You know, when you're talking about culture and you talk about street culture and we've talked about throughout the hour, you know, when you say you want to be in Chicago because you want to deal with some of the issues that are affecting the communities here, violence in particular, and yet, and some people have texted in and asked me these same questions about, you know, some see hip hop and some see rap music as glorifying gang membership, drugs, selling drugs, illicit behavior, crime, things of that nature that are some of the same ills that are affecting these communities you want to help. So how do you, I mean, I think I know the answer, because I think these are artists that are reflecting their experiences. They're not glorifying, they're reflecting it. But what's your answer to the idea that there's this great contrast in the music where the things that, you know, hip hop artists rap about are the same things that are troubling the communities and that they're trying to get over. So there is this sort of head scratcher about the glorification of some of these things.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, it's a complex situation. You know, on the one hand, it goes back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, that a lot of people don't recognize the extent to which, you know, the corporate forces have controlled the imagery and some of the things that are put out there. And to the point where, yes, you know, hip hop in some ways, I feel, has had some negative effects over these past 10 or 15 years, because it hasn't been allowed to evolve organically the way that it...
Because this kind of music makes money, let's say it's drill or whatever it is, it makes money, keep making money, we don't care what the effect is on the community.
That may be, you know, one of the reasons, and there may be others, you know, but, you know, on the other hand, if we're going to have, you know, conversations about why the inner city communities in Chicago are the way they are, it's certainly not because of hip hop, not a chance. You know, so anyone that's thinking that hip hop is, you know, the cause of that, you know, they're misguided.
Right.
You know, we need to sit down and really talk about, you know, what's going on in these communities and what can be done to change it. And hip hop was a big part of empowering these communities for a long time and was on a course to do that. And, you know, it can get back to that.
Giving voice to the voiceless.
No doubt.
Dave Mays, the founder, creator of The Source magazine. He's in Chicago. He's relocated here. He's going to have Dave Mays Media. We'll check out all the stuff coming up, including a podcast, which is really about, can Chicago be the new force, the new epicenter of hip-hop, that's coming out. Also, you can see Dave, he's going to be featured in the Fox documentary on the 24th of September, which is about Biggie and Tupac. This month, actually tonight is the night, the 21st anniversary that Tupac was shot in Las Vegas. He died a week later. But 21st anniversary tonight. Dave Mays, a pleasure to have you here, to meet you, and thank you for your work at The Source, and thanks for your observations tonight at the Big Table. Appreciate it.
I've had a great time, and thank you very much. You do an excellent job, man. Thank you so much.